WICC 600 and Carrick here. Happy New Year, if I haven't talked to you already today. In the studio with me, Penny Perlman, and we're talking about a book that it's not actually done yet, is it?
No, it's not.
Okay, you're still interviewing.
I'm writing.
You're still right. Okay. But it's lessons learned from interviewing all of the Miss America, not all, but a lot of the Miss Americas. So when smart isn't enough, lessons from our Miss Americas, you know, and we talked a little bit about, you know, how you ended up talking to them and how it's a scholarship program. Were there any big surprises when you talked to some of them that, like, totally, you know, blew you away of what you expected?
Well, a couple of things that came out for me. Of course, I went in with a hypothesis that all of these women were pretty smart, but I didn't know what they were like as individuals because they, you know, they've got a rather polished presence in the public eye. So I didn't know what they'd be like one-on-one. And it took a bit of time and a bit of maneuvering to figure a way for them to get to meet with me because I was a total unknown.
Right.
That's a story for another question. But what was surprising about them is, number one, is that they were uniformly gracious and warm and friendly and personable and down to earth.
Like genuinely nice people.
Genuinely nice people. And though they would often ask me when I first contacted them how long would the interview take, and I would always tell them, because I didn't want to scare them, that I needed at least a good hour and a half. Well, I ended up spending 2, 3, and sometimes 4 hours with them, because once we got talking, first, if they're very articulate, and sometimes it was just girl talk, we just had the best time. They also all turn out, I think one of the characteristics that they share was the depth of their drive and passion to pursue a dream and a goal. That really came out. These are not women who sit on the sideline. These are women who choose to take charge of their life and go after what they really want.
Could you get a sense of whether that was a personality characteristic that was inherent in most of them? Or do you think that somehow the Miss America experience, because they were all, the people you spoke to were actually Miss America, so they served their 1 year or whatever. Or do you think that some of that came from their time as being a Miss America?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. And I think actually they developed some of that before they ever got to be Miss America, because it was really quite a journey and a lot of hard work to achieve that pinnacle, you
right.
know, femininity. But, of course, the experience of being Miss America and being on, a lot of them hadn't done much public speaking before, so they were really forced into the public eye. And, of course, it really boosted their self-confidence. I mean, as one of them said to me, at 22 years old, where would I have had the opportunity to meet the President of the United States, senators, you know, CEOs
right.
of major corporations, to hear my voice?
Oh, come on, we didn't all do that?
Didn't we all? Yeah, but some of them spoke before Congress. You know, and had resolutions passed about things that were, you know, that they were promoting as part of their platform.
Okay. And I would think that, you know, that might have caused some of them to experience an early midlife crisis. I mean, if you're, you know, where if you look at that, you would think, well, my gosh, have they peaked at age 22? They were Miss America and okay, their reign is over. And now what do you do? I mean, if they might, you know, have a year or two left or something of college, but, you know, it's like the rest of life would seem like maybe a bit of a letdown compared to being Miss America for the last year.
Well, that's a point well taken, Anne. I mean, that is very true. What I found, which actually was a bit of a surprise, was that after they spend their year of their reign, if you will, or their year mm-hmm. of service is what they call it now, those that had very clear objectives about what they wanted to do next, like go to medical school or go to law school or get a performing arts career or whatever it is, they experienced less of a transition.
Because they dove right into the next thing.
Right, because they knew exactly where they were going. The ones who were less sure about what was next, you know, the Peggy Lee syndrome, is that all there is when the spotlight moves on, struggled a bit, I found. And I didn't realize the magnitude of that transitional period for some of them, what that would be like, because they had so many experiences that most of us never get in our lifetime.
Right. I mean, I can only imagine, because I know that I felt some of that because I was so driven in what I was doing when I was a student and in high school as far as my competitive skating. I mean, so driven and so focused, you know, and so from that, when I realized I wasn't going to hit that top spot, so I had to go to the next thing. And I knew I went right to college. That's what I wanted to do and everything. You know, and sometimes I felt like, I looked at what I'd done up until age, you know, 22, 23. You know, I remember people who would look at my resume when I came out of college. They were like, wow, I don't know how you did all that in, like, the number of years you've been here. you know, and then it was like, I felt like, and then there was like this nothingness comparatively. I mean, obviously I was doing things, but you know, some of the things I had done before the age of 24 sounded much more exciting or glamorous than the things I was doing afterwards, even if the things afterwards were more substantial from a life standpoint. And so I can only imagine as Miss America that that, you know, is just multiplied and magnified several times over. So the ones who struggled, how did they sort of regroup and figure out what they were going to do?
Well, I don't think that what they experienced was that unusual. They probably just experienced it earlier than some of us.
Right.
Yeah, because we all reach a point in our lives when we wonder, like, what's next, I think. So they, as all of us do, they regrouped. Some of them started families, and so they raised their children. Some of them decided to go back to school and get a graduate degree a few years later and pursue another direction.
Like go in another direction, yeah.
Right. Some of them found that their platforms, you know, they all have to adopt a social cause,
right,
became then a driving force for them.
Well, especially, I guess, if you've spent a year working on it, and
right,
if you still truly, if that's still a passion to you, then you, that's a good one to follow.
Right. And some of them have done the most extraordinary things. Nicole Johnson, for instance, who's Miss America in 1998, she was diagnosed while she was competing as a type 1 diabetic, I think at the age of 19 or 20. And so, and people said to her, oh, no, you know, you really shouldn't. The stress of competing is too much. It won't be healthy for you, because she had become very sick all of a sudden. She'd
right.
been hospitalized. And so she defied them all, you
right.
know, which is part of what you do. If you believe in something, you keep moving forward, and now has become a real advocate for diabetes awareness. She has her own television show, Sunday evenings, and she works with pharmaceutical companies to increase diabetes awareness. She's lobbied before Congress for greater funds for diabetes research. So that's just one example, you
sure.
know, of somebody who found her direction.
And I'm sure you have many stories like
I
that.
Do.
You know, sometimes I'm surprised when, I mean, on the one hand, it's obvious how she would be an excellent spokesperson, you know, when you've gone through it yourself. And at the same time, sometimes I wonder, you know, if, you know, like, would I want to do that? Because if I already have it, do I really want to, you know, live, breathe, and eat the disease that I'm dealing with on a daily basis? Or would I rather, you know, focus my free time energy, so to speak, you know, towards something else? You know what I'm saying? Like, would you be tired of talking about diabetes already? But apparently no, in
right.
her case.
Well, you brought up an important point, because one of the things that a lot of them, especially what I've done, is I've interviewed 21 former Miss Americas and several from each decade, because I really wanted to follow what happened to them
right.
over the years. And what I see in the older ones is that they find that a life of giving back, where some aspect of their life is involved with charitable pursuits or making a difference in people's lives, that's ultimately where they get their satisfaction, their soul, S-O-U-L,
right.
satisfaction from. And I think that's a very important component of people who have lasting success.
I was going to say, I think that's true. It's not just Miss America. I mean, if you listen to people who are very successful, a lot of times they have, you know, it's somewhere in their life they're giving back. And it may not look like, it may not sound like something that's that important to someone else, but it, you know, either it's related to something happened to them in their life, and so they want to make sure that that same situation doesn't happen to other people. And it may not be a life-threatening disease, but it's important to them, and they feel like it's helping other people. And you hear all the time that when you volunteer and help other people, you usually get a lot more than you're giving. It doesn't matter what the situation is.
Well, that's correct. As a matter of fact, Donna Axum, who was Miss America in 1963, I think, she's, when I talked with her, she's on 7 different boards, and a lot of them in the arts, because
okay.
that's a passion for her. So, you know, they find whatever is their passion, that's where they pursue giving back.
And those are definitely good lessons for anybody.
Absolutely.
You know, I've often thought that people who suffer from depression, if you could get them motivated enough to go and volunteer, that they don't realize that would make them feel so much better. In other words, and when somebody's in the midst of a deep depression, it's hard because, you know, the idea of going and volunteering is so far off their list that, you know, it's hard to convince them to do that. But I often think that sometimes it would be much better therapy than a lot of the paid therapy that they sit through.
Could be.
Yeah. That's Anne's personal theory without a psychology or psychiatry degree, either one. You know, let's dispel some of the myths maybe that people have as far as the questions that the Miss Americas get for interviews and the tall and leggy aspect, because I know, you know, those are two things that everybody, you know, who's ever watched a pageant, he thinks they all look like they're, you know, 7 feet tall and it's half leg. And then the questions for the interviews, like, what is with those questions? You know, and the answers sound as goofy sometimes as the questions. But, you know, if you ask somebody a really silly question, it's hard to have a good answer, you know.
Right. And just think about it. I mean, if you're like 21 years old and you're standing on a stage in front of millions of people, you know, in the television audience, and you've got 12 seconds to answer a question that you haven't a clue about what's coming at you, I mean, I don't know how well I would do. I think what's really important that a lot of people don't know, and this was actually a surprise for me, was that each of the contestants gets a 15-minute interview with the judges.
What you don't see.
Which you do right. not see in the week before.
I think television has done a better job in recent years they don't show that whole interview, but they kind of do clips so you see them going through that process so that people at least realize there's other conversations going on behind the scenes that we never see as a television viewing audience.
Right, and I did also interview a number of judges.
Oh, that's good.
Which was really interesting, including Bruce Jenner, if any of you remember. He was a great Olympian.
Right, decathlon, right?
Yeah, and so they said that the interviews were really critical because the woman who becomes Miss America is a representative. She's not just a representative of the Miss America organization, but she is supposed to be a role model to young American women. So she needs to be able to speak intelligently about a lot of subjects. And so it's in that 15-minute interview in the week before that a lot of the decisions are made. So
the pageantry part that we actually view is really just that. It's the pageantry part. It's not the guts and soul of picking Miss America sometimes.
That's really very true. I mean, a lot of the women prepare quite extensively for the interview section. I mean, they have to know current events, they have to know current culture, they have to know about a lot of different things, and they tell me how they spend months reading all the newspapers, they do mock interviews because they recognize the importance of the interview process.
And I'm sure part of that interview, too, is if they happen to be asked a question about something that they don't know, is how they handle that, because, you know, my personal opinion is if you don't know the answer, it's better to just say, I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with that topic, as opposed to try to dream something up. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more to Penny Perlman about her experiences interviewing Miss Americas and maybe dispel some other myths. If you have questions, burning questions you've always wanted to know about Miss America, this could be your chance to get them answered. You can always give us a call. We'll be right back. WICC 600.